Chapter 6. Return to Naboo. Even if she had wanted to, Padme couldn't have mistaken this Naboo for her own. The spaceport at Theed had been under renovation and expansion before the Federation occupation 13 years earlier, completed several years afterward during Padme's reign. But here, it had been moved from its position at the foot of the cliffs below the city to a plain 15 kilometers to the west. The twilight edged around the no-fly zone above the city itself, touching down in the Theed Central Spaceport, which, in Padme's opinion, hardly deserved the name. She'd never seen another instance of a non-military spaceport so far from the urban area it supported. When she brought it up to Ani, he just shrugged and said, "That's how it is." At least Naboo smelled the same, she thought, stepping off the Twilight's boarding ramp onto the landing pad they had been assigned, and looking up at the clear blue sky. Just being here felt good. Anakin followed her out, the hood of his jacket up to hide his resemblance to Ani. He looked around and smiled, visibly relaxing. "It's pretty," he said. "It's open to attack from the air since it doesn't have the..." "Please don't," Padme said. He gave her a startled look. "What?" "I don't want to think about Naboo being a military target," she said. "Even if it is, and I know it must be, because otherwise we wouldn't have passed a home fleet in orbit. But I can't think of it that way." "All right," Anakin said immediately. "Anything you want." He looked at her hopefully. "It is pretty, though. It gets more light than the other one, and having it out here means it must be quieter in the city." Padme nodded slowly, looking around. It was hard to see from the ground, but the spaceport had the characteristic flowing lines of the Naboo, the buildings on carefully concealed shield generators made out of the same stone as most of Theed. Approaching from the air, she had seen that it was laid out in the shape of a rayed sun, with plenty of room to expand in any direction if necessary. A maglev rail connected it to the city, but it still seemed incredibly inconvenient to her. "Why?" she murmured. "Why put it all the way out here? Even if she couldn't afford to complete the renovations after the occupation ended, why move the spaceport entirely?"
"It was destroyed during the occupation."
Padme jerked in surprise, reaching automatically for her headscarf before realizing how suspicious that looked. Anakin turned too, his hand vanishing up his sleeve to grasp the hilt of his lightsaber. The man who had spoken, wearing the uniform of a Naboo PortSec officer, raised his empty hands and smiled at them.
"Sorry, I didn't mean to startle you. Ani calmed me on his way in. I'm Officer Terrell from Theed Central Spaceport Security."
Anakin tensed even further, but before he or Padme could react to that, Ani's voice came from behind them as he said,
"Right on time as usual, Dylan."
He strode down the Twilight's boarding ramp past them, carrying a slim wooden box. Terrell held out his hand for it, but Ani kept it tucked under his arm. "I've got refugees off Echo Station in the Sartananian system," he said. "Alderaan pulled them out, so I ran them back to Confederate space because stars know the reps wouldn't have bothered."
"You've been in hyperspace too long, Skywalker," Terrell said. "You didn't catch Queen Brea's announcement? Alderaan left the Republic. They're Confederate now."
"What?" Padme gasped. "Alderaan would never! They're one of the founding systems of the Republic!" She turned to Anakin in astonishment, but he looked just as shocked as she felt.
Alderaan and the rest of the delegation of 2000,
the port psych officer said with grim satisfaction.
That'll show the reps.
Padme clapped her hands to her mouth, too horrified to speak. The delegation of 2000, which Mon Mothma had sounded her out for a few months before the Battle of Odrin, had been formed to persuade the Supreme Chancellor to back off from his increasing usage of emergency powers. Presumably, it had had a different purpose in this universe. Like treason. Ani just shrugged.
I get paid either way. My four are going to need paperwork.
Terrell's gaze went back to Padme and Anakin.
Four?
Ani jerked his thumb over his shoulder.
Two more inside. Tempadenta chips with the refugee status ought to do it. Depends what's in that box, Ani boy.
He tipped back the lid so that Terrell could see the box's contents, then shut it as the port sec officer started to reach for it again.
The identichips?
That box is looking a little spare, Terrell observed,
since I assume there's a reason your passengers aren't walking straight through immigration.
Yeah, Ani said, his steady gaze not wavering as Anakin shifted his weight slightly, leaning forward.
It's called none of your damn business.
He slid a hand into the pocket of his jacket, pulling out a cloth-wrapped package and flipping back one corner of the wrap with his thumb. Terrell leaned forward to see, then nodded, apparently satisfied.
That'll do. I might have a job for you, by the way. I'll set you up later.
Thanks.
Ani handed the box over, but held the package back when Terrell reached for it.
The identichips first.
Anyone ever tell you you're very suspicious for a guy your age, Ani boy?
Terrell said, tucking the box under his arm.
Yeah, you, every time I fly in,
Ani said.
I grew up in hot space, Delin. Ever set foot on Nal Hadda or Tatooine? You'd be surprised at just how easygoing I am.
Identichips. Refugee status. No questions. Terrell tossed off a jaunty salute.
You keep those handy for me, Ani boy, he said,
then turned and strolled away. Ani waited until he had gone, then shook his head and slid the package back into his pocket.
Slimo. He's not a bad guy, as long as you don't make the mistake of trusting him too far and keep your pockets full.
What just happened? Padme asked. Ani tucked his thumbs into his belt.
Dallin will put the wallet into the system and tag us all as having gone through immigration and cleared customs. Then he'll get you temp identichips with refugee status. No one will look too closely at that.
He eyed them.
I figured you wouldn't want to have to get fingerprints and retinal scans on file, and that's going to be a problem for you. That's why I told your friends to stay inside. They're the most likely to be recognized.
Oh, Padme said.
Naboo, her own Naboo, it didn't require that kind of security for casual visitors. Almost nowhere in the Republic or the Separatist worlds did, since it was almost impossible to actually enforce planet-wide. As Officer Delin Terrell was proving.
We couldn't have landed outside the spaceport? Anakin asked, apparently having similar thoughts.
We could have, Ani said. We could also have gotten blown out of the sky by the Planetary Defense Force once we deviated from our approach vector, since they tagged us as soon as we jumped out of hyperspace. I spent too much time rebuilding the Twilight to play chicken with a couple of N1 starfighters if I don't have to.
Does that happen often? Padme asked, swallowing.
In her own universe, Naboo simply didn't have the military ability to make that possible. Though she knew security hadn't been tightened since the Clone Wars had begun, since the Supreme Chancellor's home planet was a tempting target for the Separatists. She hadn't paid much attention, since as a senator it wasn't technically her concern anymore. But she had been aware it was happening.
Ani shrugged.
Some idiot tries it every few months. Then salvage crews pick the wreckage out of the swamps.
Amidala's pilots are top of the line. I'd love to fly with them someday.
I have, Anakin said.
Ani glanced at him, his eyebrows going up, then shrugged as if he had decided to be unsurprised and unimpressed by anything Anakin said or did.
Has Alderaan really left the Republic? She said, focusing on that instead of on Naboo's planetary security.
Bail and Brea would never...
Ani shrugged.
The Twilight's not hypernet capable, so I don't get holonet transmissions until I'm out of hyperspace. And the stars know you can never get any decent news out of the Republic anyway. They interdict anything they don't like.
I've noticed, Padme said softly. Then a thought struck her.
We're in separatist space now. Are those reports still interdicted?
Not once your system updates. I can do that for you, if it doesn't automatically,
he added, caught Anakin's glare, and shrugged again.
The Confederates never interdict Republic reports either, if that's your next question.
Padme had just assumed they did. To hear that they didn't was baffling to her. She knew that Dooku and Palpatine both regularly interdicted holonews reports in Separatist and Republic space back in her own universe. For the first time, it all felt like too much to take in.
I'm going to see if I can find Brea's secession speech, she said. I have to know why. I never thought Alderaan would ever... I thought Bail's request to declare war might have been a trick, but to actually leave the Republic?
She shook her head. I can't believe it.
Anakin put a hand cautiously on her shoulder, clearly expecting her to throw him off again, and apparently relieved when she didn't.
I'm sure there's a reasonable explanation, he said.
Padme couldn't help her bitter laugh.
Don't you understand? She said. That's what I'm afraid of.
Padme, with Anakin and Obi-Wan on either side of her, watched the holovid of Queen Brea's secession speech twice. She was struggling to make sense of it, because it was so counter to everything she knew about Alderaan and the other members of the Delegation of 2000. After the invasion of Naboo 13 years earlier, the Trade Federation had faced sanctions from the Galactic Senate, as well as being forced to pay monetary restitution to Naboo. Surely the same had happened in this universe, where the Federation had erred even more grievously by occupying Naboo for a year instead of only a few months. The reparations the Senate had forced on them for the crime had been what drove them into the arms of Count Dooku and the other Separatists in the first place.
Unless the Senate didn't require reparations in this universe. But why would they do that? Palpatine was still Supreme Chancellor then.
Palpatine. If Anakin was right, and he had engineered the entire Federation invasion in order to oust Chancellor Valorum from power, then maybe he had also been able to manipulate the Senate into siding with the Federation against the Naboo, without making it look like that was what he was doing. But he wasn't Chancellor anymore. Dooku was.
She cut the third replay of Brea's speech off mid-word, her fingers flying over the screen as she pulled up the public records for Palpatine's political career.
What are you thinking?
Obi-Wan asked, seeing what she was doing.
I just want to know why Palpatine left office, Padme said.
And when?
Look, here. She pointed at the screen. 7 years ago, 4 years before Naboo declared planetary sovereignty, he was forced out of office by a vote of no confidence, just like Valorum was. It was about something called the Pantoran Crisis. The motion was made by Bail Antilles of Alderaan and seconded by Orn Frita of Ryloth. Asgak of Mastalor put Senator... She blinked. Senator Dooku of Sereno's name forward for the office.
Senator?
Anakin said disbelievingly.
When did that happen?
Padme tapped the screen. About 3 months after he left the Jedi Order, which was 3 days after Obi-Wan Kenobi did, a week after the liberation of Naboo 12 years ago. She stared at Obi-Wan in bafflement. He was a Jedi for a full year longer than he was in our universe.
Why?
Anakin asked.
Actually, I don't know if I ever heard why he left the Order in the first place.
He looked around at Obi-Wan, who sighed heavily and said,
Because of Qui-Gon. Qui-Gon used to be his Padawan, you know,
he added, for Padme's benefit.
And he held the Jedi Council personally accountable for Qui-Gon's death. I don't really know the details, since the Council did its best to shelter me from it at the time. But the rumor is that he had been getting increasingly frustrated with the Council's handling of certain matters, and Qui-Gon's murder was his snapping point.
Did he blame you? Padme asked him curiously.
No.
Obi-Wan hesitated for an instant, then added reluctantly,
He has tried to recruit me several times, including on Geonosis. Anakin and I are both in his lineage, the line of masters and Padawans.
Yeah, but he doesn't like me, Anakin said, and it's never stopped him from trying to kill us.
I suppose it doesn't matter here, Obi-Wan said.
He glanced up as Ani came in, grinning in fierce satisfaction.
I've got your identity chips, he said, holding them up. I told you Dylan would come through.
He passed them to Padme as she got up to take them, passing them out to the others.
How long will you stay on Naboo? She asked. Your friend said something about another job?
I'll probably be here another couple of days, sending out the options,
Ani said, leaning back against the door jamb.
With the war on, you can always find something, especially since the Republic's probably cracking down on the delegation systems right now. Why? You want to keep me on retainer? I'm not cheap.
We just like to know our options, Obi-Wan said,
flicking a warning glance at Anakin when he seemed about to protest.
You'll be here?
He nodded.
Or in the spaceport caravanserai. You can ask for me. They know me there.
He hesitated.
Not that it's any of my business, but you're not planning anything that's going to bring the security forces down on me, are you?
Of course not, Padme said.
Ani sighed. I did mention I can always tell when someone's lying, right?
On the maglev train from Theed Central Spaceport, Padme watched Theed approach. First the mostly residential suburbs, then the city itself. Even from here, she could see that there were gaps in the familiar skyline, places that must have been bombed out or torn down during the occupation, and which hadn't been rebuilt yet. The sight made her clench her fists, nails digging into her palms.
You could have concentrated on fixing your own planet before starting a war with the Republic. You didn't have to do this.
The dome of the Theed Opera House was missing. An entire city block had been bombed out, replaced with a park that the maglev line passed over.
Padme, peering out the window, saw children playing in it, watched over by a knot of gossiping mothers and nurses. Several blocks away sat the shell of the old Civic spaceport, its roof caved in and its walls blackened by fire. The Theed Royal Library was ringed by scaffolding, droids and construction workers busy renovating or rebuilding it. Padme couldn't tell which. Empty lots, some still littered with refuse and the blasted remains of the buildings that had once occupied them, appeared at irregular intervals as the maglev train flashed by. Narrow towers, rising up above the buildings around them, marked shield generators, and what Padme had a sinking feeling were gun emplacements.
The course of one of the city's smaller rivers had been changed, though she couldn't imagine why that might have been done. It curved around an artificial outcropping of land with another tower and a group of buildings on it, before recommencing its previous path. It was recognizably Theed, but Padme couldn't have mistaken it for her own Theed even if she had wanted to. They alighted at Palace Plaza Station, Padme tugging a fold of her headscarf up over the lower half of her face. They had left their luggage, what little there was of it, in a locker at the spaceport, so all they had to carry were the clothes on their backs and a lot of concealed weaponry. The Maglev Station. The Overground. The Naboo Underground connected Theed and the other cities via the dangerous waterways of the planet core. It wasn't actually on Palace Plaza proper, but several blocks away, so she and the others walked over. Even though she had seen Palace Plaza on Amidala's Holonet broadcast, she somehow expected it to look different. Instead, she could have stepped into her own Theed before or since the Federation occupation. The dome of the Queen's Hall, the oldest part of the palace, rose in front of her, its tiled green roof gleaming in the sunlight. 6 members of the palace guard stood in sentry boxes in front of the palace, armed with heavy DC-15A blaster rifles instead of the blaster pistols they would have carried in her own universe. Padme swallowed at the sight, but a tension she hadn't known she was carrying lifted from her shoulders. "The Queen's in residence," she said, letting Obi-Wan steer her away so that the guards didn't notice she was staring and decide to investigate further. There would only be 2 guards if she wasn't. "Okay," Anakin said. He seemed to be looking around. Padme didn't realize for what until he turned them in the direction of a small tea house just off the plaza. They had come here the last time they were on Naboo together, a few weeks before he and Obi-Wan had been sent to Odrin. The familiar space soothed her as they took a low table near the window, sitting on embroidered cushions as a waitress brought 2 pots of fragrant yellow tea and a plate of pastries. Padme stared out the window at the courtyard, made curious by the unfamiliar statue at the center of it. There was a plaque, but she couldn't read it from here. Obi-Wan poured them small, black-glazed cups of tea with quick, precise movements. "What are you intending, Padme?" Padme took a chala fruit and sweet cheese pastry, getting powdered sugar on her fingers, and said, "I thought we'd break into the palace." For a moment, the 3 men just blinked at her. Then Anakin leaned across the table and hissed, "You want to what? There's a regiment of guards patrolling the palace!" "I know," Padme said. "We're not going to walk in the front door. Obi-Wan, do you happen to remember the shadow plans I showed you 13 years ago when we came back to Naboo to take the palace?" Obi-Wan's gingery eyebrows went up. "Some of them," he said. Anakin had told her once that Jedi were trained to remember everything, even minute details of many years past. "Do you think they're still accurate? There have been quite a few changes to the city." So he had noticed the gaps in the skyline, too. "We'll have to take the chance," Padme said. "It's the only way to get into the residency without going through the main corridors. There are secret passages that lead directly to the royal suite."
"I seem to remember security systems in the plans," Obi-Wan said cautiously.
"Yes, but they're retinal scans and voice prints," Padme said. "They'll let me in."
"And probably you, too," she added, with a sideways look at Anakin.
His mouth tightened. "Obi-Wan and I can go in," he said. "We've done self-missions before. We can go in, grab the Queen, and..."
"No."
Padme met his eyes. "It's my palace, my planet, my problem. You're not leaving me behind, Annie."
"Besides," Obi-Wan said, in a frustratingly neutral voice, Padme knows the palace far better than either of us.
We could go in over the rooftops.
Remember that it isn't merely the queen, her handmaidens, and the palace guard we have to concern ourselves with, Obi-Wan said softly. There's the other Obi-Wan Kenobi, too.
Anakin went still. For a moment, his gaze was haunted, his hands closing into fists on top of the tabletop. Then he said,
You and I are better than Master Luminara and Master Koth. We can take him.
We're going to have to, Obi-Wan said. His head tipped sideways for a moment.
If he's here at all. I can't sense him, but I don't know if I'd be able to, even if he was sitting in the room right next to me.
Don't try, he added chillingly, dropping a hand onto Anakin's wrist as he took a breath.
Yeah, I learned my lesson, Anakin said dryly.
That would be the first time, Obi-Wan said. He let go of Anakin and took a pastry from the plate, tearing it in two and scattering pearl sugar across his plate.
Are you set on this course, Padme? It's very risky.
I know, Padme said, curling her fingers around her teacup. I have to know, and she's the only one who can tell me. She's the only one I can trust.
You don't have to come, none of you do.
Of course we do, Anakin said indignantly.
You're not leaving us behind, m'lady, said Rex,
speaking up for the first time, and Padme smiled gratefully.
Obi-Wan just said, You aren't the only one who wants answers, Padme,
and dropped his gaze. Supervisory Special Agent Pilly and Special Agent Tulev arrived at the Senate building in record time, both of them looking drawn thin and sleepless with strain after long nights spent at the Special Operations Bureau offices. Tulev looked like she was on the edge of a nervous breakdown as she trailed her department head into the executive office.
Sir, I mean, Your Excellency, it's an honor to meet you.
Dooku inclined his head slightly.
SSA Pilly, Agent Tulev, thank you for coming.
It's our pleasure, Your Excellency.
Tulev had the tight, anxious expression of someone who spent most of her time at a desk staring at a computer screen. But her hands were steady as she held up a data chip and said,
May I, sir?
Of course.
Dooku stood up from his desk to see better, as Tulev plugged the data chip into a holoprojector. The broadcast holo came up immediately. Tulev made a gesture to slant it to one side, bringing up a second projection of what looked like computer code.
It's standard to run projections for authenticity on broadcasts like this, Tulev said. To do that, the computer compares the broadcast footage to verified footage. In Amidala's case, we've got a lot of that, going all the way back to her initial plea in front of the Senate 13 years ago.
The Togruta's voice got steadier as she spoke, warming to her subject.
For Kenobi, there's less, because even though he usually accompanies Amidala in her public appearances, he hardly ever speaks. But there's enough physical evidence to get a baseline for him. When the computer ran the authenticity projections for this broadcast, it came up with mixed results. It's almost certain that part of the broadcast is genuine. Part of it is digitally generated. The generated vid starts here. She tapped a control on the projector. Amidala's deep voice began.
Already the Supreme Chancellor has asked for mercy for these would-be assassins.
They watched in silence until the vid finished, Pilly flinching a little as Kenobi's lightsaber fell. Tulev appeared to have seen it so many times that it didn't affect her anymore.
There are inconsistencies? Dooku asked.
It's a very good generation, Your Excellency, Tulev said. Even the computers were confused at first. But part of that is because some of the audio and the blocking is directly tagged from Amidala's previous broadcasts. She and Kenobi have carried out public executions before.
I'm aware, Dooku said dryly. How certain are you of this?
I can't be 100% positive, but I'm pretty sure, Your Excellency.
She paused,
then added, "The computers said that there was only a 20% chance that Kenobi would kill a Jedi in cold blood, based on past projections."
"I think the Jedi would not agree," said Dooku.
Pilly said, "I've found that the Jedi prefer to rely on their feelings rather than the evidence, Your Excellency. No disrespect, Mance." He looked worriedly at Dooku, but before he could reply, Tulev said quickly, "There's one other thing, Your Excellency. Broadcasts leave a trail behind in the Holonet Relay Network that we can track. This one originated on Naboo, in Theed, just like the others, but when it bounced around the relays, it didn't follow the usual pattern."
"I was under the impression that there was no usual pattern," Dooku said,
who was familiar with the Holonet relays from his own days as a Jedi. "Not the individual relay points, no, sir, but usually the broadcast begins in the Chomel sector with Naboo and radiates outward along the relay points. It's not quite instantaneous because of the distances involved, but it usually spreads at the same rate in both the Confederacy and the Republic systems." Tulev tapped another control on the holoprojector, collapsing the displays and bringing up a map of the Holonet relays. A web of glowing golden lines connected some of them, leaving dark spots where relays had been bypassed. Dooku frowned.
"Are these all
Republic systems?"
"Yes, Your Excellency."
Tulev looked up at him with faint triumph.
"This broadcast was only routed through Republic relays, not Separatist ones. When I noticed this, I went back and looked at the rest of the Holonet relays for the timestamps. We can't get into the Confederate system."
"I thought we could."
"They changed the security settings again," Peely said apologetically. "Our slices were working on it, but right now they're all busy trying to clean up Senator Organa's virus." Tulev hesitated for a moment at the interruption, then went on. "We can't get into the Confederate system, but we can look at the Holonet relays for that timestamp. And when I did, I found this." She tapped a control, and a web of blue sprang up, connecting the spots left dark by the Republic relays. "That's a broadcast sent out at the same time as the execution. Same origin, and it follows the usual pattern for Amidala's broadcasts, except that it leapfrogged over the Republic systems and only went to the Confederate ones. Amidala's never done that before."
"Queen Amidala believes in transparency in government," Dooku said. "Sending one broadcast to the Separatist systems and another to the Republic isn't her style."
He shut his eyes, suddenly feeling every day of his 70 years.
"Do we know what the Confederate broadcast was?"
"Not yet, Your Excellency," Pilly said. "Up until a few hours ago, we had no idea it even existed."
"Find out," Dooku ordered. "If Amidala didn't send this broadcast, I want to know who did. And if she wasn't executing Jedi, then I want to know what she's been doing for the past week."
Of Naboo's three moons, only one was a sliver in the sky, while Umadun was nearly full and Rory waning, with only a little more than a third visible. It left them with plenty of light as they made their way across the now-deserted Camp Vian Gardens, heading for what appeared to be a maintenance shed at the center of the park.
It was locked, but that didn't matter. Padme carried picklocks as a matter of course, and had it open within moments.
The four of them slipped inside, Rex pulling the doors shut behind them. Anakin ignited his lightsaber without being asked, raising it so that they could make their way through the pitch black of the shed, past neatly stacked shelves of gardening equipment.
It actually was a maintenance shed, Padme thought with mild amusement, pushing aside a rolling shelf.
Beneath it was a round hatch. Padme tapped a finger against a slight indentation at the center of the hatch, pulling her hand back as it slid soundlessly to the side, revealing a dark passageway large enough for a Wookiee to disappear into.
"Light," she whispered.
Anakin crouched down beside her, flicking his wrist slightly so that his lightsaber illuminated the descent, along with the ladder against one side of the passageway.
"I'll go first,"
he said, deactivating his lightsaber just as Obi-Wan ignited his. He boosted himself over the side of the passageway, hesitated for a moment, then pushed off. Padme held her breath until she heard him land. Then his blade flared blue as he called up.
"It's all right."
She looked down to see him standing at the base of the ladder, what seemed like a long way down. The glow of his lightsaber made the fine bones of his face almost sepulchral in the gloom.
"I'll bring up the rear,"
Obi-Wan assured her, as she twisted around to begin her descent. The rungs of the ladder were cool and a little damp against her bare fingers. She had to concentrate in order to keep her booted feet from sliding off the slippery rungs until she felt her feet touch the plainly tiled floor.
"There should be lights
here," she said, Anakin following her with his blade so that she could see. She tapped the control, setting it to its lowest setting, and the corridor filled with soft yellow light. Anakin deactivated his blade with a hiss, slotting it back up his sleeve. They were standing in a small, round chamber, tiled to protect against Naboo's usual dampness. Three doors, all locked, led off in opposite directions. None were marked. Padme frowned for a moment, calling up her memories from when she had been queen. It seemed like a very long time ago now. "That one," she said, pointing at the door on the far right as Obi-Wan landed beside her. Like Anakin, he hadn't bothered with the ladder. He glanced up at the open hatch and twitched a finger. Padme glanced up to see it slide silently closed.
"Show off,"
Anakin muttered, but there was a smile lingering around his lips. Padme crossed to the door and laid her palm against it, forcing herself not to blink as she felt the light play over her open eyes. "Padme Amidala of Naboo," she said. The door slid silently open, lights illuminating along the corridor in front of her. Padme stepped through, followed by Anakin and Rex. Obi-Wan brought up the rear. They made their way through the corridor, which was just wide enough for three people to walk abreast. The secret passages in and out of the palace had been designed to be confusing. Padme knew that many of them ended in dead ends, or opened into the cliff face, or other, even less pleasant, destinations. She kept careful track of which turns they took, hoping that she was remembering correctly as they slowly began slanting upwards. The feel of the air changed very slightly, enough to let her know that they had come up above ground. Hopefully they were in the palace now, rather than in the RNSFC hangar or RNSF headquarters.
"Should we be worried about guards, Senator?" Rex asked her softly.
"Not in here," Padme said, after a moment's thought. "They'll be at the entrances and in the main corridors, but not the secret passages." She took the right-hand turn at the next intersection, which led them to a narrow staircase. Padme stared up at it, then stopped when she realized that the others had stopped. Obi-Wan was still standing at the intersection, frowning down one of the other corridors.
"What is it?"
"I could swear I sensed..." He shook his head.
"I must be imagining things."
Anakin gave him a worried look, but Obi-Wan just laid a hand on his shoulder before following Padme up the stairs. They climbed for a long time. Eventually, Padme became aware of the sound of running water, which meant they were close enough to the cliff to hear the waterfalls beneath the palace. That meant that either they were going to fall to their deaths in the next few minutes because she had taken a wrong turn, or that they were in the right place. The odds were probably about even. It turned out to be the ladder, to Padme's relief. She recognized the door in front of them, which, while otherwise as plain as all the others they had passed, had a scuff in the paint near the bottom. She glanced back at the others and nodded, then touched the controls, her skin buzzing slightly as a security scan read her fingerprints. The door slid silently open in front of her, revealing only darkness beyond. Padme reached out, her fingers brushing against the back of the tapestry that concealed the entrance, and pushed it aside with one hand as she reached for her blaster with the other. They were in the Royal Suite Solar, at the top of the residency. Moonlight glittered down through the glass panels of the ceiling, illuminating comfortable couches tossed with embroidered cushions and throws. An unlit brazier stood at the center of the room, and closed glass doors led out to a balcony that encircled the entire spire. Padme couldn't help smiling at the familiar sight. She had spent many hours here when she had been queen. On a clear day, the view from the balcony was breathtaking. It was perhaps an unlikely place for a secret passage to let out, given how exposed the room was. But since it was the highest point in the palace, the only way for someone else to see what was going on inside was from the air. Padme glanced back to make sure that the others were behind her, then made her way to the door, which opened at a touch. The spiral staircase that led down to the main rooms of the royal suite had narrow steps. Padme felt her way carefully and slowly down, resting her hand on the elegantly carved banister as she did. It was too dark to make out the design, but she knew that if she had brought a light, she could see the story carved into the wood in miniature, telling the old Naboo fairy tale of the queen beneath the waters. It had been her favorite bedtime story as a small girl. The staircase ended in one of the royal suite's largest sitting rooms, which doubled as a library. Padme's boots were soft on the richly carpeted floor as she crossed to the door, which, at the moment, stood open. She hesitated for a moment, trying to guess whether or not the other Amidala had her handmaiden sharing the royal suite with her. No, she decided finally. If she had, there would be more evidence of it. And if her handmaidens had been injured in the Republic's assassination attempt, Amidala would certainly have mentioned it in her broadcast. Padme would have. She made her way through the dimly lit rooms until she found the bedroom. The door slid open at her touch, and Padme stepped inside, her gaze immediately flickering towards the big canopied bed. The gauzy curtains were drawn back against the bedposts, so that she could see immediately the rumpled silk sheets on the empty bed. Padme drew in a sharp breath of dismay and stepped forward, her gaze flickering quickly around the room. She pressed the back of her hand quickly to the bed, feeling the fleeting impressions of warmth against her skin. A familiar purple dressing gown lay across the back of an armchair. Amidala hadn't been gone long, nor had she gone far. Padme's gaze went to the closed refresher door. She went to it quickly, one hand on her blaster grip. She still didn't know what she was going to do if and when she found Amidala. She was reaching for the door controls when someone grabbed her from behind, the narrow barrel of an ELG-3A blaster pistol pressing against the base of her jaw. "Don't move," said Queen Amidala of Naboo. Anakin's lightsaber flared into existence, illuminating his face. "Let her go," he snarled. Obi-Wan's blade followed an instant later. By its glow, Padme saw that Rex had already cleared both blasters from their holsters. "Jedi," Amidala spat, a wealth of disgust in the word. "So much for—" Her voice caught abruptly. "Obi-Wan?" It was an instant of hesitation, and all Padme needed. She shifted, slapping at Amidala's hands to turn the blaster away from her face, twisting it out of her grip to turn on her. She had only a brief glimpse of the other woman's face before Amidala's fist slammed into her wrist. In the midst of the confused grappling that followed, she felt the weight of the blaster on her hip vanish. She and Amidala ended up with each other's blasters pointed at each other, and Padme got her first good look at the Queen of Naboo. It was like looking into a mirror. The weight of Amidala's hair, a good 2 handspans longer than Padme's, was arranged in 12 braids for sleep. There was a line of neat sutures on her forehead, just above her left eye, from a recent injury. She was barefoot and wearing a white nightgown, but her grip on Padme's blaster was steady, and her gaze never left Padme's face. "Has Dooku sent you to kill me?" she asked. She even sounded exactly like Padme. She sounded more like Padme than Annie had sounded like Anakin. "No one sent us, Your Majesty," Obi-Wan said. Amidala's gaze didn't waver, but Padme saw something like hurt cross her face. "You're not him," she said. "No, Your Majesty." "Is he dead? Have you Jedi finally succeeded in killing him too?" There was a hiss as Obi-Wan's lightsaber deactivated.
"Why do you think we've come to kill you?" he asked curiously.
"The Republic has thought we're more useful dead than alive for the past decade," Amidala said. "As you should know, Jedi. Or have you been too busy in your temple to pay any attention to the rest of the galaxy? I'm sure you never bothered to ask Yoda and Dooku why he sent you here." "No one sent us," Obi-Wan repeated, his voice calm. "My name is Obi-Wan Kenobi, Your Majesty. This is Anakin Skywalker and Captain Rex, and the woman you're holding a blaster on is Padme Amidala." Amidala's gaze was sharp and intelligent. "Clones? The Kaminoans will do anything if they're paid enough." "Does no one in this galaxy know that it's actually impossible to clone Jedi?" Anakin said, sounding irritated. "We're from an alternate universe. I know it sounds insane, but it's so insane it's actually true." "Convince me," Amidala said. Well, at least she was taking it better than Annie Skywalker had. He had been hysterical for at least 10 minutes after Padme broached the subject for the first time. Ability to detect lies or not.
Has your Obi-Wan ever mentioned Force artifacts to you?" Obi-Wan said carefully.
Padme didn't dare take her eyes off Amidala to glance at him, but she suspected she knew what he looked like, could imagine the expression on his face.
"They are objects that have been imbued with the Force and have certain abilities, certain powers, which can be activated by a Force user."
"They're just a myth," Amidala said. "Obi-Wan said that the Jedi no longer have the ability to create them. If they ever did exist, they've been lost for millennia."
"We found one," Obi-Wan said. "In our own universe, during an archaeological dig conducted by the University of Alderaan. Due to circumstances out of our control, we were forced to use it to escape a situation that would otherwise have killed us. And it brought us here."
"Alternate universes are a theory debated by philosophers and physicists in the core worlds." Amidala's mouth was tight, but the corners turned down slightly in a frown. She studied Padme's face, then said abruptly, "Why is your universe different than mine? It's something to do with turning right instead of left, micro-decisions, isn't it?"
Padme said, "We think something went differently during the Battle of Naboo. In our universe, the droid control ship was destroyed by the Starfighter Corps. No need to bring Anakin's involvement into it. The occupation ended when the Federation lost control of its battle droids. Viceroy Gunray was arrested and taken back to Coruscant for trial."
Pain flickered briefly across Amidala's face. "I'm the senator for Naboo," Padme went on, emphasizing. "In the Galactic Senate. Naboo is still part of the Republic. Obi-Wan is a Jedi Master on the High Council and a general in the Grand Army of the Republic in the war against the Separatists." Amidala actually laughed. "No one in their right mind would make that up," she said.
It's too unbelievable. Why are you here? You came in through the secret passages, didn't you? The security system must have thought you were me.
Padme nodded slowly.
I want to know why, she said.
At Amidalan's raised eyebrows, she added.
Why leave the Republic? Naboo believes in democracy. I believe in democracy. And you...
She had to stop, anger making her hands clench on her blaster grip. Amidala's mouth twisted.
If you're naive enough to still believe in the Republic, then there's nothing I can say to convince you that I did what I had to do in order to preserve this system.
Probably not, Padme said. But I want to hear you try.
She hesitated, then lowered her blaster, flipping it around to hold out grip first towards Amidala.
I'll trade you, and we can talk without pointing blasters at each other.
I don't want to hurt you. I just want to understand.
Amidala's eyes flickered sideways. Padme followed her gaze, and at her raised eyebrows, Anakin reluctantly deactivated his lightsaber. Rex holstered his blasters an instant later.
Perhaps you could send for your... for Obi-Wan Kenobi,
Obi-Wan said, stumbling uncharacteristically over the words. Amidala finally lowered her blaster, her frown deepening, though something about the expression told Padme that it was about something other than their presence.
I can't, she said. He isn't here. He went off-planet to meet... to escort a friend back to Naboo, and he hasn't returned yet. He was supposed to be back yesterday. Now he's more than 36 hours overdue.
Amidala sent them back up to the solar while she dressed. It was clear that she still didn't trust them, because a few minutes later, two handmaidens slipped into the room, their expressions carefully blank as they moved into the usual positions for a group of four in a round room. Two more handmaidens followed Amidala up as she entered, slipping into the empty places. Padme identified them automatically.
Sabe, Motie, in her own universe, murdered a few weeks earlier by Darth Vader. Dorme and Irtai, her blonde hair incongruous against the dark braids of the others.
Dressed now in a high-collared red and gold gown with puffed sleeves and embroidery paneling on the front, Padme blinked in surprise as she realized she had the exact same gown in gray and black back in her closet on Coruscant. Amidala sat down in an armchair, folding her hands in her lap. She hadn't bothered to put on the royal face paint, nor had she changed her hair, though Padme suspected that was more a matter of practicality than anything else, since she knew from experience just how long it took to manipulate hair of that length. Her expression was as impassive as that of her handmaidens. Padme wondered just how much Amidala had told them. As much as she could in the time she had, she suspected. It was what she would have done. Amidala's gaze flicked coolly over the Jedi and Captain Rex, wavering for an instant on Obi-Wan, then settled on Padme.
"You had questions, my lady," she said, not hesitating over the rank. "Would you prefer to ask them, or should I start from the beginning?" In her civilian spacer's jacket and trousers, Padme felt very shabby next to Amidala's immaculate gown. Still, that didn't change the fact that she was a Republic senator with a pair of battle-hardened Jedi Knights sitting on either side of her, a clone captain alongside them. So she tipped her chin up, met Amidala's cool brown eyes, and said, "Perhaps you ought to start with what happened after Master Jin and Master Kenobi rescued you on Naboo 13 years ago. I have a suspicion about where exactly our universes diverged, but I'd like to hear your side of it." Amidala didn't answer immediately, but Padme had the impression that she was thinking about the best way to word her response, as well as dredging up what were undoubtedly painful memories, rather than unwilling to answer. The Royal Yacht ran the Trade Federation blockade,
she said at last. We sustained minor damage to the shield generator, but nothing that kept us from continuing immediately on to Coruscant. On then-Senator Palpatine's advice, her eyebrows arched slightly as Anakin and Obi-Wan both tensed at the name, but she continued without hesitation. I prepared a petition to present to the Galactic Senate, but the Federation and their lackeys prevented me from doing so, and the Supreme Chancellor bowed to their wishes. Useless, she added, her voice cracking like a whip. You moved for a vote of no confidence in Chancellor Valorum? Padme asked. At Amidala's nod, she added. And Senator Palpatine's name was put in for the position? Yes. He was elected by a slight majority, but by then I was already en route back to Naboo. There was nothing else I could do on Coruscant, not with the Senate in disarray over the vote. Obi-Wan and Master Jin were ordered by the Jedi Council to accompany me. Obi-Wan said suddenly, Did you know anything about a Zabrak assassin at the time? He would have used a double-bladed red lightsaber. We thought it was after Padme. After you, I mean. Amidala's gaze moved to him. There was another flash of dismay across her face, so quickly that Padme wasn't even sure it had really been there. No, she said. No, we didn't know about Darth Maul until much later. Padme glanced at Obi-Wan, but his expression was as carefully blank as ever. He made a gesture for Amidala to continue. We landed on Naboo and made contact with one of the Gungan populations, Amidala said. Something about the way she phrased it made Padme think that this wasn't the first time that she had told this account. We hoped to use the Gungan army to draw off the majority of the Federation droid forces from Theed, while a smaller strike force entered the palace in order to capture the Viceroy and force the Federation back to the negotiating table. A third strike force of starfighters would destroy the droid control ship in orbit around Naboo, deactivating the majority of battle droids on the planet. There was a bitter twist to her mouth. They failed. Her hands clenched into fists for a moment, then relaxed. The Gungan army was defeated. My strike force was able to take the palace and the Viceroy, but Qui-Gon Jinn was killed while dueling this assassin. Obi-Wan defeated him and joined me in the throne room with the Viceroy, while the remainder of the strike force secured the palace. All the starfighters were destroyed. Anakin jerked in surprise. Amidala's gaze flicked to him, curious. But she didn't ask what had prompted the response. Quietly, Padme asked, Did the Trade Federation offer to negotiate for the release of Viceroy Gunray? It turns out that Newt Gunray wasn't the only Nemoidian with political ambitions, so no, they didn't, Amidala said. Her mask slipped for an instant, nothing but pure rage beneath it. She shut her eyes tightly, her fists flexing on her lap as though she was longing to wrap them around Newt Gunray's neck. Padme understood the urge. Then, as suddenly as it had begun, she was calm again. The Federation resumed their blockade and landed more droid troops. From the palace, we were able to keep control of Theed up to the Red Line. The what? Anakin asked. It's the furthest point that the city shields can cover, Padme explained. They covered about 5 square kilometers of territory. The main shield generator is in the palace. We never got a chance to get it up during the initial invasion. Amidala nodded. The Federation bombarded the city every night for months. They kept hoping to take us by surprise or weaken the shields enough to drop entirely. A few times, droid troops were able to get through, but we were able to repel them. They jammed communications so that we couldn't contact Coruscant. She locked her hands together, her red painted nails bright against her pale skin. The occupation lasted 12 months, 3 weeks, and 6 days. 121,617 Naboo citizens died during that period. 63,792 more have since died as a result of treatment or injuries received during the occupation. Those are the ones I can prove. There are more I can't. Padme caught her breath. Compared to the civilian casualties sustained on thousands of planets over the course of the Clone Wars, it was nothing, a drop in the bucket, but for Naboo? Didn't the Senate send aid? Or the Commission La Dawd demanded to investigate? The Senate, Amidala said, conveniently forgot that we existed. Palpatine was too bogged down in cleaning up Valorum's messes that he wasn't able to do anything. Or at least that's what he claimed. She glanced at Obi-Wan. The Senate hobbled the Jedi and kept them from investigating. The Trade Federation protested your involvement, claiming it was an internal matter between the Naboo and the Federation. And since neither party had asked for Jedi involvement, the Supreme Chancellor had no right to send the Jedi independently. The Senate voted and stripped the office of that power, though Dooku regained it as soon as he was elected. "They can't do that," Anakin said. He looked across Padme at Obi-Wan, who seemed equally shocked. "Can they?" "They did," Amidala said. "The Republic abandoned us," she added bitterly. Eventually, there was another upheaval in the Federation command structure, and they decided that Naboo wasn't worth the effort and funds they were expending on us, and pulled their troops out of the system. In return, we handed over Viceroy Gunray and the other Nemoidians we had captured during the occupation. Once we had communications back, we were able to contact Coruscant. The Senate sent a commission to investigate, and the Jedi High Council arrived at Obi-Wan's request. Then Chancellor Palpatine came as well. Her mouth worked for a moment in cold fury. The Trade Federation went back on their agreement with us as soon as they were clear of Naboo space, of course. They claimed that since it had been made under duress, it was illegal. It was in the courts for 5 years. It was all too believable, Padme realized, with dawning horror. The Trade Federation had a lot of power. The fact that they still had Senate representation, even though they were still firmly on the side of the Separatists, was proof enough of that. They were more than capable of tying up the Naboo in legal battle for years. "Didn't the Senate offer humanitarian assistance?" she asked. If Padme didn't know the Handmaidens, or their equivalents, so well in her own universe, she would have missed the flash of bitter anger that passed among all four of them, as well as Queen Amidala. "The Galactic Senate," Amidala said, "under the advisement of then-Chancellor Palpatine, offered the Republic and Jedi assistance in rebuilding Naboo and its colony moons on the condition that the government of this system be turned over to an external committee appointed by the Senate, since we were clearly incapable of governing ourselves in such trying circumstances." It was like being slapped in the face. Padme actually reeled back, horrified, and suddenly it all made sense. She knew the Senate. She knew how the Trade Federation and the other Commerce Guilds functioned. She even knew how much Palpatine liked to micromanage affairs that shouldn't have been any of his business. The Senate would have done it. The Senate had done it, dozens of times since the Clone Wars began. Padme had voted on it. She'd been on one of those external committees. She'd thought it was the best option at the time. And she knew how badly the system in question had taken that Senate interference. "You told them no," she managed to say. Amidala nodded slowly. "We just fought a war to keep our sovereignty. Tens of thousands of my people died because we would not give up our sovereignty to the Trade Federation. Nothing the Senate could offer was enough to make it worth that cost." She looked at Obi-Wan, who was stiff with shock and horror. Obi-Wan left the Jedi Order over it when they supported the Senate's decision. He didn't resign because he was in love with me. We both knew when we started that he was going back to the Jedi when the occupation ended, if we were still alive by then.
I understand, Obi-Wan said.
He blinked several times rapidly, Padme and Anakin both staring at him.
I would have done the same. Thank you for telling me.
Amidala's expression softened for a moment. I've known Obi-Wan for a very long time, she said. I know that he didn't want to leave the Order. He struggled with the decision for many years afterwards. He still does. Obi-Wan didn't say anything. Padme glanced at him, worried by his silence, and saw him staring at his hands. It had to be nearly as difficult for him to come to terms with the fact that circumstances existed under which he would resign from the Order, as it was for her to countenance leaving the Republic. Amidala unclasped her hands, smoothing them across the fabric of her skirts. Looking at Padme, she said, "You implied earlier that I no longer believe in democracy. That's not true. Everything I have done, every decision I've made, every battle I've fought has been because I believe in democracy. The Galactic Republic was formed by the people to protect the people. No one system should have the power to decide on the lives and fortunes of everyone in the galaxy. No corporation should have that kind of power, because corporations don't believe in people, just credits. I didn't wake up one morning and decide to overthrow the Republic. I did everything I could to avoid reaching this point, because I know better than anyone in the Senate what war does to a star system, what it will do to thousands of star systems beside this one. I never wanted any of that. But the Republic as it exists today hurts people. People die because of decisions the Senate makes. Because when the Senate makes a decision, on the rare occasion it makes one at all, most of the senators and representatives in the Convocation Chamber aren't thinking about people. They aren't thinking about the systems they represent. They aren't thinking about the citizens on their home planets. They aren't even thinking about the Republic and what it represents, what it ought to represent. They're thinking about themselves. Power, privilege, credits. How can they get more of it? You said you were a senator, my lady. You know that it's true. The good ones, the ones with principles who really believe in democracy like Bail Organa of Alderaan and Mon Mothma of Chandrila, are a minority. They can seldom gain any power because they're simply not ruthless enough. They're not willing to sacrifice their principles to fight on the same level as all the others. It's admirable, but it doesn't win votes. The Republic is broken. It was broken 13 years ago, and it's been shattering ever since. Chancellor Valorum was ineffectual. Palpatine was even worse. Dooku has been keeping what remains of the core values of the Republic together through sheer force of will, but even he has to bow to the Commerce Guilds. They're the real rulers of the Republic. They have the money, they have the troops, and they hold thousands of systems at knife point. The Trade Federation invaded this system, occupied this planet, killed and enslaved our people, and the Senate let them go with a slap on the wrist. In the decades since, they've done the same thing to half a dozen other systems, all but one of which gave in to their demands after the blockade began. If the Banking Clan ever wanted to cripple the Republic, they could do so easily. The Republic owes them more credits than they could ever dream of paying back, not in a millennium. I know Dooku wants to stop relying on volunteer security forces and droid troops on loan from the Commerce Guilds, but the only way he can do that is by buying them. For a moment, she showed her teeth. Buying my troops. Because the Confederacy actually has real money, not just promises. But Kamina will take the Republic's credits even if they really do belong to the Banking Clan, and I won't lie about the fact that I can't outbid the Republic.
I wanted to believe in the Republic. But it's broken. It can't be fixed. The only thing I can do is build something new. Something strong. I believe in the dream of what the Republic used to be. What it is supposed to be, and what it was made to be. But the only way I can make that dream come true is by building it from the ground up. It's the only way that I can be sure that what happened to the Republic will never happen in the Confederacy. I don't want to fight a war. I don't want more people to die. If I could have left politics when my second term ended, then I would have. Because I would have liked nothing more than to retire to the Lake Country with my husband and live a quiet, peaceful life. I still want that. But I can't do it. That path isn't open to me anymore. The Republic will never let these systems leave, and it won't permit rivals. The Commerce Guilds can't countenance anyone without a metaphorical blaster held to the heads to keep them in line. I can give you a dozen examples of crimes against civilization that the Senate has committed or allowed to be committed in the past century, and I will not be a part of any system that allows those atrocities to take place without ramifications, legal or otherwise. I don't want to fight a war, but the Republic hasn't given me a choice. I will do what I must if it means I can protect my people, our way of life, and the principles that are all that stands between civilization and chaos. They all sat in silence as Amidala finished speaking. Without being summoned, one of the handmaidens stepped over to a refrigerated cupboard and produced a flask of nectar. She brought a glass over to Amidala, who took it silently and drank, her eyes fixed on Padme. Does she want me to agree? Padme thought, looking back at her. I can't. Does she want me to disagree? I can't do that either. The Commerce Guilds in her own universe had a lot of power. Too much power, as far as Padme was concerned. But nothing like what Amidala had implied. As for the rest of it, Amidala wasn't lying. It was all true. Maybe not to the same extent, but Padme had been a member of the Galactic Senate for the past 5 years, and in that time, she had had a front-row seat to the kind of backstabbing and back-scratching that went on behind closed doors. Or out in the open, sometimes. There was a reason that so many systems had flocked to join Count Dooku's separatists, even if he had the Commerce Guilds at his beck and call. Obi-Wan leaned forward and said, his voice very gentle,
"You know there is a chance that the Confederacy will be destroyed if it comes to war, Your Majesty."
"I know," Amidala said, "but I have to take that risk. What kind of woman am I if I'm not willing to fight for what I believe in? My people know what the Republic and the Trade Federation did to them, Master Jedi. So do the populations of every system in the Confederacy. We all knew what we were getting into when we embarked on this course many years ago." Padme steepled her hands together and touched them to her mouth, still trying to think of something, anything, to say. She was saved by the sound of a chime throughout the chamber, a light on the comm panel by the door beginning to blink. Sabe went to answer it, saying, "Her Majesty is in a meeting at—" She froze, her face going white. Amidala's head came up. "Put it on speaker," she ordered. Her hand shaking slightly, Sabe tapped the comm panel controls. Padme didn't recognize the different male voice that followed, but the words were all too clear.
"Your Majesty, Planetary Defense Headquarters. A fleet of Trade Federation warships has just come out of hyperspace.